The Pillow Book of Nyota Uhura, written and read by Hana Nobita. This is the first time in a long time I've written any fanfiction, and my very first podfic, so I do welcome any comments or advice you might have at Hana Nobita on Twitter or hananobita@gmail.com. And it's based on The Pillow Book of Sei Shonagon, which, if you've never read it, oh, life-changing. You definitely should get on that now. But anyway, let's begin. The Pillow Book of Nyota Uhura. Blue Things. The disgusting but nutritious bouillon stew the doctor has been championing to anyone who will sit still long enough. A gaggle of science officers walking past, heads together. And one hears incomprehensible phrases like transinductional matrices. The ocean one went to with one's lover last summer. He admitted to its beauty, but refused to touch the water. Although one's lover is very often feline in his mannerisms and behavior, that day he was particularly cat-like. The necklace given to one by a potential trade partner the Enterprise had been sent to negotiate with for dilithium. It had been large and ugly, and the total opposite of one's personal style, and in private afterwards, one laughed at it with one's friends. The blue-gray fog rolling down the streets of San Francisco, and the blue-green shine of the bay. Although one is quite satisfied with one's station aboard the Enterprise, occasionally one does feel a certain nostalgia for the Academy. But nothing can compare to the electric blue of the Enterprise's warp nacelles, slender, proud, and alluring. To the crew, they represent adventure and hope and peace and home. One day, Lieutenant Chekhov brought back a tribble from Deep Space 3. It was small and cute, and all the crew fell instantly in love. The lieutenant seemed quite unsure of how to handle the female attention it brought him. One saw him at mealtimes in the mess, surrounded by a cluster of cooing ladies, looking simultaneously thrilled and terrified. The newly appeared rivals for Chekhov's friendship whipped Lieutenant Sulu into such heights of jealousy that he made several caustic remarks to the object of his affections and shocked everyone in the room. Poor Chekhov seemed quite hurt and bewildered to suddenly be the target of such animus. It was clear to everyone but him that Sulu was madly in love with him and only refused to send him a love poem out of a misplaced protective instinct. When encouraged to do so by friends, Sulu claimed Chekhov was too young and unlearned in the ways of the world for that just yet, and he would not encourage his friend in anything that might upset his innocent heart. One must admire Sulu's delicacy and restraint. It is so rare to find a lover that is always careful to maintain harmony on the ship. One wishes to see such self-control from another man aboard the ship, who recently outraged everyone by visiting 3 different women on 3 consecutive nights. When gossip revealed the ladies in question how they had been used, there were weeks of tears and accusations and thinly veiled insults and poems. It was most upsetting. But one's heartstrings were pulled unwittingly when one saw how Chekhov stared longingly at Sulu, for one knew he would never turn down an offer of a nightly visit from him, not even if it were written in prose. The tribble delivered septuplets soon after that, which soon after that gave birth to another soft, purring mass, and while the crew admired the tribbles for their silky fur and comforting cheeping, eventually it became obvious that they were reproducing at a rate that would eat us all out of house and home within 2 weeks. So in the end, the captain banished the tribbles from the ship and tasked the first officer with removing them. The first officer was shocked by the vehemence with which the ladies of the ship refused to hand over their tribbles to him. After much ado and quoting of Starfleet regulations, he managed to rid the ship of the furry menace, but the entire process was tasking and made him a few enemies. He confessed to his lover afterwards that the entire incident was fascinating, but wearying. So what could one do but invite him to rest in one's quarters and recuperate from the stresses of the day? To apologize for his hurtful words, Lieutenant Sulu sent Lieutenant Chekhov in a poem that read, "The tribbles have gone, but one feels their loss keenly. Will one ever see them again?" Chekhov went to the doctor for advice on writing his reply. The good doctor was more than happy to help and encouraged him to finally declare his affections to Sulu. Chekhov's answer was thus: "The dilithium crystal's cracks lack only the hands of a loving engineer to be repaired." He sent the message to Sulu's pad while Sulu was on bridge duty. The bridge crew did not understand the sunny smile that graced Sulu's face the rest of the shift until the doctor spread the particulars of the entire incident around the ship. The day after the Klingon incident in the Vagan sector. The day after the Klingon incident in the Vagan sector, I invited the first officer to accompany me on the Vulcan lyre while I practiced my singing in the mess hall after shift. Although I certainly had been neglecting my music shockingly the past few months as I struggled to adjust to my new and challenging life aboard the Enterprise, my true motivation for issuing the invitation was not entirely musical. I really wished to see more of my dear friend, who had been very distant lately. I thought that perhaps music would awaken the lover in him and turn his heart back to me. We stayed up playing until the early hours of the morning. Eventually, the chief engineer, who had come in for a nightcap and stayed to hear our performance, suggested a poetry contest. He said he would give a valuable bottle of Saurian brandy to the one who wrote the best poem about the moons of his home planet. The first officer grew quite cold at this proposal. He sent our pads the following poem: "The old man in the moon weeps, for never again will his Vulcan friends visit him in the night sky." Then he sat himself in the back of the room and refused to speak any more. Of course, we realized at once how very inconsiderate we had been and apologized profusely, but his melancholy mood would not be lifted. After that, the poetry contest idea was quite ruined for everyone. Attempting to cheer our dampened spirits, Lady Chapel began gossiping about Sulu's ongoing affair with Chekhov. The two were besotted with each other and were often seen on the bridge staring soppily at each other instead of attending to their stations. We talked and laughed in this way for some time, but still the first officer would not rejoin us. The chief engineer complained about the harsh 24-hour lighting in the Enterprise's halls, which quite hurt one's eyes when one walked out of a lover's dark room after a nightly visit. Everyone agreed that the lights, while infinitely practical in an emergency, rather ruined the elegance of a morning after farewell, for all of us have at one time or another been most horridly jolted by the sight of a lover's dreadful bed hair and pillow-creased face and the severe fluorescent glare. By and by, our conversation turned to the subject of the captain, who had been caught sneaking out of the Tholian ambassador's daughter's room a full hour after dawn. The Tholian ambassador was quite understandably furious and was making noises about nullifying the treaty with the Federation. This behavior, everyone agreed, was utterly abominable on the captain's part. The captain is a very good leader, and often his brilliant plans have saved us from certain death at the last minute, but one does wish he would learn a little more refinement. Thinking to raise the first officer's spirits, I sent him the following poem about the captain: the intrepid explorer often goes where no man has gone before. Their fathers are inevitably displeased. But instead of quirking his lips at me in his version of a smile, like he formerly did so frequently, the first officer stood up and walked out of the room without a word. I later realized by observing them together that he and the captain seemed to have struck up a hesitant friendship. I would not have been critical of his friend had I known they had grown so close. But how could I have possibly predicted my intelligent and logical lover developing a rapport with a man as uncivilized and rash as the captain? Reasons one sleeve may be wet. The chief engineer has lost his temper with his green assistant once again, and in the ensuing chase around main engineering, a jar of coolant is knocked over and spills across one's arm. The chief engineer is quite apologetic and listens meekly to the lecture from the doctor. One is fond of the chief engineer and his assistant, but is rather glad that, at least for a while, their disagreements will be kept to a dull roar. In a lady's dreams, she is exploring the beach on Tycho 9 with her lover, who refuses to approach the water. She teasingly splashes him, and is thrilled when his response is to leap into the waves, pull her into his arms, and wrestle her into submission. The gleam in his eyes warms her to her toes, despite the chill of the water through her now sodden uniform. The snow on Beryllium 4 is pristine and untouched, but for the occasional animal's tracks. The lady falls into a snowbank during the initial planetary survey. She looks in anticipation to her lover, who formerly would have been at her side and helped her back to her feet, but he is studying his tricorder and does not notice. Instead, Lieutenant Sulu graciously lends her a hand. The doctor clucks over her when she returns to the ship, ordering her to spend the afternoon curled up under the blankets with a hot drink. However, even his brusque but affectionate scolding cannot make her smile today. The dew on the shore-leave planet glistens on the grass in the most poetical way one can imagine. One walks in awe through the trees, dark, wet spots forming on one's clothing where the branches brush against one's arms and legs. Of course, that vacation ends poorly when everything the crew members imagine comes to life and they are chased by a lion and the villain from an ensign's favorite holo program. But still, one counts those first few minutes in the verdant forest as some of the most peaceful of one's life. One's former lover has fallen in love with his former nemesis. Rumor has it that a few days ago he was seen by a yeoman returning to his room before Alpha Shift. Of course, one refuses to give credence to ridiculous gossip like that. But a close observation of the two as they play chess in the mess hall makes one wonder. And all possibility of denial is lost when a glimpse at one's erstwhile lover's pad reveals a poem from the other man that is somehow simultaneously the most vulgar and the most arousing thing one has ever read. Needless to say, one wishes one's dear friend all happiness in life. And the two of them, though superficially polar opposites in personality, actually do complement each other well. So there is no choice but to consider the matter closed and finished. Still, one cannot hold back one's tears.